Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I'm sorry that today's episode will probably be a bit shorter than usual, and similar fate is going to be happening with the next two episodes, because, like I said, I'm about to fly off to Rome, and, well, preparation work needed to be done. However, I want to leave you without news completely. The news base will still follow, and like I said, I will return with a proper long interview or analytics again when I get back. But currently, well, we have active war news, and then we have some interesting events, which I already mentioned in the last episode, but which I would like to expand to upon currently. Right now, a Ukrainian Army General Office states that 31 Russian battalions or tactical groups have lost the ability to fight, but, you know, I take that with a bit of caution here. However, basically, what we know for sure from my combat intelligence gathering, Polesie, Siversk, and Yuzhnoburg, in these districts, the Russians have suffered during the last night a lot of casualties, and a lot of BTRs and tanks have been lost, and the Russian advance in these districts has been stopped, and now they're trying to basically calcify the situation. Russian advance has stopped, and they're trying to dig in, basically. In Donetsk, in various reasons, this is where the Russians tried to put on an extra offensive onwards together with the mercenary LNR and DNR units. Basically, the advance is also, well, either slowed or stopped. But of course, everything is still, well, being pretty bad, since Ukrainian army has left Volnovakh, which is in Donetsk, because over there, near Mariupol and around Donetsk, there was, I told you yesterday, there was this chance that Ukrainian army would get into this kind of this, I don't even know how that's in English, sorry, like I said, weird day, but, well, in this encircled position, they avoided encirclement and moved away, so they probably were gonna have to basically fortify near Dnieper, because there are still battles next to the outskirts of Volnovakh, that city, because battles are continuing on all the front lines, and specifically, the hardest battles are fought in that region in the south of Donetsk from the Zaporozhye. Still, Izyuma is also attacked, and Toretsk and Avdiivka. But there are a lot of maps of Ukraine currently online, so if you're listening to this, you can probably just Google one up and take a look at what I'm talking about. Those are basically the red spots, and, well, situation is still carrying on with calcification. And, some events have been going on there, but we have more reports. We still have no reports on Belarusian soldiers, which is good. There are still, according to Putin, 16,000 Syrian mercenaries that are supposed to come over to Ukraine, which is just weird, but because currently Russian forces are, well, continuing to be pretty much demoralized. Apparently, intelligence reports that during the last three nights, there were small Russian deserter groups which have been spotted moving towards Russia. And this is important because, well, one thing that that couldn't make it in yesterday's episode, since it was already jam-packed with every information that I could find, is the story about Kadyrovtsy, the Chechens. Now, I'm pretty sure I didn't mention that, so basically, the fabled Kadyrovtsy, out of whom a part was just smashed by artillery, well, they got angry, and Kadyrov apparently only likes to pretend to be a tough guy. Because, as the letter from Bellingcat, which was leaked, suggested, these guys, you know, if Kadyrov loses, and it's getting published, he might soon lose power in Chechnya. And, you know, someone less loyal to Putin and more willing to break out of Russia could take power there. So, Kadyrovtsy are doing the best thing that they usually can. They're showing off. I've read reports that a lot of Russian army soldiers in various special operations, because Kadyrovtsy are supposed to be some sort of Chechen special forces units, yeah, they actually are not doing the things, they haven't done the things, and they have just taken credit. Basically, some FSB unit does a counter-terrorist operation somewhere, and then Kadyrovtsy arrive and take pretty pictures over there. So now, according to various sources, these people are used to form Zagranotryady. Zagranotryad, or the border guard squad, doesn't mean actual border of a country, It basically means the guys who stand in the back of the advancing army and shoot those who desert or try to run away. That was a very popular strategy during World War II by the Soviet army. And, well, seeing as Kadyrovtsi have a strong intimidation factor, especially inside Russia where they're, you know, considered to be extra tough and extra brutal, I wouldn't be honestly surprised that they are used for this purpose here. That is, of course, inhuman, but, well, what do you expect at this point? I mean, not much to worry here. Yeah, 1 hour after I posted yesterday's episode, by the way, news came in from Nagorno-Karabakh, or Arstakh. I really don't want to get involved in that conflict over there. It's a massive mess. About the fact that the people over there in this enclave inside of Azerbaijan, which is controlled by Armenia and Russian military forces, which, like, let me remind you, they are being pulled out. Yeah, over there, apparently yesterday night, there was no electricity, no running water, and there were, according to reports, and it was happening live on my Twitter feed, and one of the followers actually called his uncle or something who has, you know, who's in Azerbaijani army, that quite likely Azerbaijanis were giving out basically orders for peaceful civilians to go away or they'll be shot or something, and that the Azerbaijani army is taking this very seriously. Now, I don't have any reports of that today, and that hasn't made the news yet, but, well, maybe we'll see, because the advance was given for 160 hours. So once those pass, that's another time slot on which I'll be paying attention, because, yeah, like I mentioned, maybe the vultures are gonna go and do something with Russia or Russian-supported territories. Which, again, would be a tragedy for Armenia. I am not taking sides in any Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. I still want to live in Latvia peacefully and visit everyone. That's not my conflict. I'm just looking at it as a part of this whole bigger issue. And finally, I would like to mention another event that was covered yesterday, but which I got more thorough analysis about today, which was the arrested FSB officials. See, turns out I did a little digging, and turns out that this FSB Division 5, which is FSB Foreign Intelligence Services, yeah, they were specifically created by Putin in 1990 when he was running the KGB. You see, back in the day when the Soviet Union was collapsing, some guys up there in Moscow had a ridiculously insane idea to basically create a unified intelligence service for all the SNG countries. Well, SNG in Russian and Latvian, I guess it's the Commonwealth of Independent States. It's weird. Well, all those countries that were in the Baltics that were basically there at the end of the collapse. Now, that was a silly move, and everyone knew that that couldn't work out in the end. However, one thing that happened, actually, was that the secret services of all these countries, they signed a deal, a treaty. And this treaty basically had stated that these intelligence services of these countries won't be doing any spying on other countries of the same bloc. But after the default of Russia in 1998 and in 1999, Putin came up with this idea that, hey, I'm leading the FSB and maybe we should, you know, start doing some things here and there. And the reasoning was very simple, because the other intelligence services, such as the GRU and the SVR, well, they had signed the deal to not to spy on fellows, right? At that time, fellows. But the FSB hadn't signed anything because it didn't have a foreign intelligence arm. So Putin did it, and this kind of fifth department became the FSB's foreign arm. What's important is that they didn't do the regular spycraft. They quite openly just went to and gave speeches even into various election zones and whatever, and they were bad at this, but if Moscow wanted to show that a certain candidate is supported by Putin and that you should support him and vote the correct way, they would send people from there. They would be also responsible for either keeping up the status quo or messing with the governments that were unfriendly to Moscow. You know, the works. They would incite protests, they would have agency. Like, the department itself is small, it has about 90 people or something, but it has, you know, agency networks. And as far as we know, a lot of people in the surrounding area and the countries bordering Russia, in those areas, the leaders of the cultural communities, you know, Russian culture things, because they primarily work with the Russian-speaking population in these countries. Primarily, it's the leaders of the local cultural communities that are the head, that are involved in all this situation. Well, not like they had much of a choice there, but still. So, Putin, as he had been the head of the FSB, he's basically turned his, you know, his pillar of power, because if you remember from the Soviet era, there were three pillars of power for all the general secretaries. It was either the Communist Party, or the KGB, or the army. And Putin is strictly a KGB man, just like Andropov. But you see, Putin had been for power for so long and has been such a paranoid tyrant, especially lately, that, and he doesn't know how to use the internet. Once again, that's important. Now, the fact that, which I've been saying for a long time, that Putin reportedly, but I believe those reports, basically sits and absorbs every news given to him in red little binders by the FSB. Yeah, that seems to be true now, since, well, the people that he stuffed in, and he did a lot of purging, internal purging, since he found out in 2007 that targeted sanctions work when he purged the governors and everyone disloyal to him, just as he could previously purge the press. So the FSB was similarly purged, and people were just afraid to anger him. So they started giving him things that he wanted to hear, and nobody thought that he could do a war or something like this. It's just that, they just fed him information, basically, yeah, confirming the fact that he truly, truly had believed that he would be welcomed in Ukraine in open arms. And the same thing went around in Russian propaganda. There were countless channels just before this whole war started, just claiming that, oh no, if we walk into Kherson, Kharkov, Mariupol, all those regions, you know, where the Russian soldier is going to be greeted with flowers and everything. And yeah, because people in propaganda repeated Putin's own lies to him, and he started buying in. Well, when that turned out not to be true, my sources say that Putin has finally understood that, basically, these guys can't exactly be trusted. Therefore, that's why he arrested these top five people. Now, what's really interesting in this case is that Russian army finds itself in a weird position of power, since, well, they haven't been in the top pillar, because Russian army has arrived sometimes to save out Putin and solve his problems. Most recent example being in 2014, when it was mostly the army's initiative to do the whole Crimean thing. But yeah, Putin now is relying on his army, and his army is basically failing him, and it isn't going so well. But the planning department has just been basically, you know, beheaded, and they're going to face a lot of issues. They have a lot of potential power, but to organize it and to do something with it, well, it would take Stalin's cold ruthlessness, which Putin sadly doesn't have. Well, sadly for him, that is. Very good for all of us. But it's a mess. The leadership up there is going through a mess, and their economy is just going down. I currently give this war the possibility to either last until about August, or it could go on for years. It could go on for years if Russia really, you know, does everything, because it's going to turn into a war of attrition. But that's for another episode. That's for a big one where I'm going to go really throughout all the scenarios about how this war could possibly turn out and look at everything. So far, I really would like to just get dressed and, you know, see Rome for the first time ever. I'm really excited about that one. But like I said, sorry about less posts on Twitter, but there's still going to be an episode every day, just a bit shorter. Yeah, and always remember, happiness is mandatory, and, well, yeah, support us on Patreon or just click the donate button on our homepage, theeasternborder.lv. And of course, donate to Ukrainians. They need your help right now. До свидания, товарищи.